You know, one of the things I absolutely love about Carlosophies is that I get to sit down, often with people I already know to some extent, and find out their story, like their real story. Because so often we become friends through work or through, you know, the kids or whatever it is, and we don't really find out who they were before they are who they are now. You know, often you're talking about the surface kind of stuff, like what's happening now, particularly when you're entrepreneur friends, you know, it's like, what are you up to? Where are you, you know, that kind of stuff. It's not like, what is your story? So it always excites me to get on a podcast and chat to a friend. And Beck from Soul Sister Circle is a friend of mine. You know, most of these guests are friends of mine. So it's really interesting then to hear their story in their own words, you know, because I think sometimes we can form an idea of what someone's story is, but unless it comes from their mouth, then it's not really their story. So anyway, enough crapping on. I sat down with Beck from Soul Sister Circle, who I just absolutely adore. This chick is like the real deal. She is so, I hate to use the word sweet, but she is. She's calm. She seems like to always have a huge amount of zen about her. And she's cool as fuck. Let's be honest. She's cool. She's funny. She's witty. She's real. And I just dig this girl to bits. So I'm really excited to bring you Beck Van Leeuwen from Soul Sister Circle. Hope you love her as much as I do. I'm sure you will. Welcome to Carlosophies, Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
My story really obviously starts when I was born, but I had a pretty blessed upbringing, I would say. You know, there were bumps along the way, but for the most part, all my memories are quite beautiful and happy. Up until really probably high school. It was in high school that I probably started to identify that I was a little bit different to the other people in my school. And by different, I mean I was really sensitive. Like, it was like I could read people's emotions or feel people's emotions without them having to communicate with me. I think to a degree I'd always been like that. I'd always been very sensitive in my family growing up, but I just kind of thought it was normal. As I moved into adolescence, and obviously a period in time where everybody becomes really emotional, it became really like overwhelming. Actually, I started to really pull away from a lot of my friendships, particularly friendships that I had with women, because they're like super emotional roller coasters and it was too much. So I sort of gravitated towards men who were a lot more just flatline. That really was my default then for my high school years and through university and, you know, well into my 20s as well. I sort of remember, again, as I said, feeling so much emotion, and there was some stuff happening in my family that was quite challenging and a bit dark. So again, it was overwhelming for me. And as soon as I was sort of old enough and I could go out and drink, it was amazing. Like, I'd found this perfect vehicle that was perfectly legal for me to numb out all of this emotion. So I, you know, partied a lot. And yeah, I was working. I threw myself headfirst into my job when I finished university. Yeah, it was really, for me, I think I lost myself a little bit through partying, and there was this part of me inside that knew I wasn't authentic, that knew something was off, and that I was kind of living a life that really wasn't mine. And but rather than kind of come head to head with that and face it and figure it out, I just wanted to keep numbing it out. You know, obviously through university, I partied really hard and Then when I graduated, I was lucky enough to get a job as a video editor. I just threw myself into that, which, you know, was the perfect career path for me, really, because I was shut away in a room by myself where there was nobody's stuff to feel, you know, and I would do that by day and party by night. I really immersed myself into both of those activities because it meant I didn't have to take responsibility for anything else that was going on for me personally. I did this for the good part of a decade. I was working really long hours, burning the candle at both ends, and became pretty stressed out and burnt out. In between, I would say, coming into the workforce and slogging myself like that and my kind of awakening, or my first awakening moment, I went traveling overseas. You know, that was probably one of the first moments that I felt liberated from my life as I had built it. And I got a taste of what the real Beck was like. Obviously, that was amazing. I loved that feeling. I loved being able to be anonymous, kind of invisible, and have that space then to explore who I was and, you know, what was important to me, because I didn't have a clue. You know, I didn't stand for anything. So, you know, that was a really beautiful growth point. And around 24, it was also at that time that I met my now husband in a car park in Spain. And he has been a very, very important part of my journey as well, because he's a very, very grounded, level-headed, emotionally stable kind of dude. So he really holds me down. Like, he keeps my feet on the ground, and he really balances out my flavor of crazy that's just like, you know, all over the place, up, down. So having that constant from the age of 24 was a really important part of what then enabled me to grow and feel a level of security in doing that. I traveled for several years over in the UK, Europe, and South America. And then my husband's a Kiwi, so I moved to New Zealand and lived there with him for 4 years. And I hated it. Like, you know, I mean, I love New Zealand. It's beautiful.
Don't get me wrong. New Zealand's nice.
Let's be clear. I love New Zealand and New Zealanders, and it's all wonderful. But it rains all the fucking time. And as a Gold Coast girl, you know, from the East Coast of Australia, I just couldn't handle it. I couldn't. It was too dreary and grey for me. And it also coincided with Saturn return. So, you know, I got to New Zealand when I was 26, took like a year to kind of find my feet in this new rainy place. Like, you know, what do you guys do with your laundry? It's always raining, you know, like I had to learn a whole new way of being. Yeah. And then just as I felt I'd found my feet, then yeah, it just, the rug really got pulled out from under me, and everything that I had been suppressing, you know, that sensitive part, that intuitive part, just like came back with a real vengeance. So I just applied my usual band-aids, work harder, play harder. And so I reached a point in, I would say it was like late 2005, early 2006, where I burnt out. I was completely lost. I had no idea who I was. My body, actually, from working like 15 hours a day on a computer, my body had completely locked up. So my neck and my shoulders were so tight, and I was just carrying it all there physically, that I reached a point where I couldn't really even take my shirt off successfully. Like, I couldn't lift my arms and my elbows above my shoulders. And you know, and I had crazy headaches accompanying that. And yeah. And so I knew that I needed to make a change and get out of that job, essentially. But I was so invested in it, you know, like I had been working as a video editor and a producer, and I was running a TV production company at that point, you know, so I had climbed quite far in my career, and I really identified with it, you know. Mm-hmm. It was like I didn't actually know who I was if I wasn't that Beck. And I had assigned so much of my self-worth and my value to how well I was performing in my career and, you know, the praise that would come from happy clients or my boss, you know. I just really, I didn't at the time, I couldn't recognize, but now obviously with the beauty of hindsight, I can see what was going on there. And so it was such a painful time for me to walk away from that. And it really dropped me into a void of not knowing who I was. If I, you know, I didn't feel worthy. I was just, I kind of felt like I'd failed at life. Like I was like, I'm 30 and I've totally fucked this up. And, you know, I also had in the back of my mind, as we do, like little milestones in my life that I thought, you know, I'll be married by the time I'm 30. I'll have babies by the time I'm 30. And all of these things that I'm sitting there and I'm 30 and I'm unemployed because I quit my job. So I'm unemployed. I'm unmarried. I don't have kids. I live in New Zealand. I hate it. Like I just sat there and thought,
fuck my life. You know,
how did my life get like this? Like how did this happen?
Yeah.
And so I took some time out to just, I don't know why. At the time, I just had there was no conscious choice. I need time out. I was just like, I kind of felt like I couldn't go on. Obviously, being unemployed, I had a shit ton of time on my hands. So I was like, just left there with my thoughts. That mean girl. Yeah, right. Bad, bad place to be. And my mean girl is a nasty bitch. Yeah. And she just tore me apart, you know. And it was like an opportunity for me to sit there and just watch reruns of all the stuff that I'd done throughout my life that failed. And I ended up in a deep depression, you know, like, of course. And I detested myself. And I basically bought into the story that anything and everything that I do turns to shit. So why even bother, you know? Anyway, it was just getting pretty dark and grim. And I just, on a whim, decided I should learn meditation so I can shut this bitch up.
Yeah.
And so I took myself off to a Buddhist temple in Auckland and I started to learn meditation. And it was my savior. Like it honestly very, very quickly shifted a lot of crap for me. But old habits die hard. I threw myself right into it because I was like, right, let's just apply another Band-Aid. So I literally became, I went from student meditation class student to taking people on tours of the temple and I became the PA to one of the monks there. Just spent every day working, volunteering at this Buddhist temple, which was amazing, don't get me wrong, because I obviously gained so much in that time and studied a lot of Buddhist philosophy, which is something that I still carry with me today. But yeah, it was definitely the bridge that needed to be there. But it kind of had that addictive tendency to it at the same time. And, yeah, so I did that for 6 months. And it was funny at the time because obviously my now husband, my boyfriend then, was very, very, very open and understanding and supportive. Like he never judged me or thought that it was odd that his girlfriend has decided to no longer drink and no longer eat meat and meditate every day. He was like, okay, sure, babe. And you know, and then same goes with his beautiful family, you know. So here I was actually thinking, I'm just kind of flying under the radar here a little bit. I'm still the normal Beck, but on the outside they must have just been thinking, you know, like, who is she fooling? Like, she's having a breakdown. Yeah, so classic eat, pray, love stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah, and the octopus, you know, it's on your face. And the only reason you can't see it is because the tentacles are going around your eyes. So you can see out fine, but everyone is looking at you going, you've got a fucking octopus on your face. Better do something about that.
Yeah. So funny. So, yes, I and I left that octopus there for a good number of years. Like, really. Anyway, so it was great. I grew a lot as a person. As I said, I learned a lot and I got a lot of tools to navigate through the stage in my life that I'd found myself in through being at the temple. So it was, 110% some of the best 6 months I've ever spent in my life. And so after that 6 months, otherwise I would still be there, I'm sure, we left New Zealand and came back to Australia. I was, I had this beautiful Zen about me, right? Of course. And I was like, everything's great and, you don't need lots of money and you just need to cultivate peace and let go of attachment. And, I had all this big bag of tricks that was just holding me up. And then I came back to the real world, an environment where my parents live here, and there was a lot of conversation around, well, Beck, you haven't been working for over 6 months and what are you going to do with your life? Mm-hmm. And I really felt like the immense pressure and the familiar feelings of, okay, I'm not good enough. I need to define myself now quickly with a good job to put that value badge back on. And while every single cell in my body said, do not go back into that corporate environment where you were before because you don't thrive there, it was all I knew. It was my default. So when an opportunity came along, it was a crap opportunity, but an opportunity all the same, I just took it. It was like, I remember the day I signed that employment contract and just feeling like I'd sold my soul. I had quickly traveled through time back to where I was, mm-hmm. So I did that soul sucking job for, I don't even know, it felt like years, but I think it was probably around 8 months. and I had to get out. I really couldn't tolerate the toxicity of this particular environment. And I was working in an office, and next door to our office was this company that looked great on the outside. It was a music company and they made mobile apps and did all this really cool stuff, and everybody that worked there wore skinny jeans and they had like great hair and they played like really cool music loud from the office, and I was like, that's where I want to be. Like, that place has got soul and everyone's allowed to express themselves freely. And so I was in the lift one day and there was a man who worked there in the lift with me, and I pretty well just straight up asked him for a job. He at the time looked at me like, this crazy bitch just, talking to me in the lift, like I just want to eat my kebab sort of thing. And I thought, well, that probably didn't go down well and I'll probably never have a hope of getting a job in there ever. But like the next day he emailed me and was really open and said, no one's ever done that before. I actually think that was really cool and I want to give you a job. So I moved next door into the cool office, which turned out to be not that cool in the end. And
because just be real here, if everyone's wearing skinny jeans and they all have cool hair, they're probably not really expressing themselves.
Right. And, it was like the shiny thing and it was the music industry and it was going to be so super cool, and it just was shit. And I got thrown into the deep end there because I didn't really have any experience in any of what I was doing. So like literally at work Googling, how do you launch an app? So tons and tons of stress. Because there was this constant fear of being found out. Like, they're going to find out that I don't know shit about shit and they're going to fire me and then I'm going to have to go back next door. Yeah. So anyway, that turned out to be not right for me either. And so I was I'd kind of fallen back into this really negative thought process of, you just can't get this together. Like, you cannot figure out your life and you just keep making mistake after mistake. And so I knew I wanted to do something different, but I didn't have enough confidence in myself to be able to make the right decision. So it was really, really painful to try and find somewhere new to go. And at the time, life coaching wasn't really a big thing. Like, it was just starting to, I'd say, kick off here in Australia. It was huge in America. I remember at the time looking at all of these various different coaching schools thinking, well, it's not a university degree, so no one will take me seriously. Like, you know, again, just really feeding that fear of not knowing enough and needing the piece of paper. But in the end, I just decided, look, I'm just going to give it a crack and see if it's for me, if it's not for me. So I enrolled to become trained as a life coach. And I remember going down to Melbourne, because my college was in Melbourne, to do my first face-to-face training, and just having this like complete overwhelming experience of, I've found it. I'm home. Like, this is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. And I just felt that on every single part of my body, you know. I just threw myself into that study, and I was loving it. I learned so much. I met some incredible people, and you know, I was excited because I had an exit strategy. I was like, going to train up as this life coach and then leave the corporate world and become a life coach. And I fell pregnant with my baby girl, Indy, at the time. So it was like, perfect. I'm going to go on maternity leave, then I'll build up my business, my coaching practice, and all will be well in the world. To a degree, that went to plan. I started coaching by night. So I was kind of like working at the music company by day and then, you know, changing the world by night. Was loving it. Like, it was fantastic. I was studying. You know, I have memories of being up late at night listening to course lectures and breastfeeding Indy and taking notes with my left hand and, like, you know, just crazy. But I was thriving in the pursuit of my dream. Then Indy came along and I took, you know, 3 months to just adjust to being a new mum and all that entails. And then I slowly went back into coaching. And what I found, so now I'm working for myself. I don't have my day job. This is my day job. And I found it tough. Mm-hmm. Like, I was kind of faced with the realization and the isolation that mm-hmm. comes with being a solopreneur, like being on your own all day, every day, and being the one that makes the decisions. And then being the one that has to solve the problems when the decisions you made perhaps didn't pan out how you thought. And I found it really, really tough and really, really isolating because, as I said to you before, I didn't have a whole lot of confidence in my ability to make good decisions. So on a daily where I have to like make tons and tons of decisions that were going to determine the success or the failure of my business, I was just like, really in a lot of anguish and a lot of anxiety around doing that. I remember also like looking around on social media and comparing myself to everybody else and seeing so many life coaches just crushing it and just doing so, so well. And, you know, some of them had no training and I'm like, but I've got the piece of paper. Like, surely I'm more awesome than them. You know, I should be the one that's got this thriving business and what's the difference and what, you know. And it really, really, again, just drove my self-confidence down. You know, comparisonitis is a crippler. Mm. Again, I was like, here I go again. I'm failing at this again. Like, I just am not cut out to do anything. Maybe I should just be a mom. I thought at that point, I need to network. I need to get myself out there and just, you know, get past the fear of being seen and showing up and just get out there and drum up some work. And so I started going to like business networking breakfasts and B&I groups, and I hated it. Like, I would go in there and just feel completely alien in that environment. And people would ask me what I did, and, you know, I would, you know, I started all guns blazing. I'm a holistic life coach. You know, I work with mind, body, spirit, blah, 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 blah. And their blank stares were just so judgy and so disempowering that I would then go, okay, well, that's feedback to me to maybe dial down the woo-woo part and just be like, I'm a life coach. But even then, you know, it was like there was this level of confusion around who I was and what I did. And it really was disempowering and disillusioning for me. I just thought, I'm just not cut out for this business stuff. You know, and then I'm thinking, there are all of these people out there. There's got to be someone else like me. Like, I see life coaches popping up here, there, and everywhere. Where are the people like me? Where are my soul sisters, like my tribe of people? I couldn't really find them anywhere. Like, there was no obvious place to see them or to connect with them. And then there was a group of girls in Brisbane, bloggers up in Brisbane, who I think one of them like put a call out on Facebook and said, who wants to maybe get together and have a lunch? Maybe four or five girls said yes. And I was just like, you know what? I'm coming. I'm going to drive the 45, 50 minutes from the coast up to Brisbane to just meet the random group of strangers. And it was amazing. I think we met for like 2.5 hours, and we just connected on such a deep and meaningful level. It was really like soul nourishing.
Yeah.
So comforting to finally have that isolation taken away. Like, I was so not alone. Every one of those girls that I met with was exactly like me. Yeah. You know, we were all trying so hard to chase our dreams and really make a positive difference in the world, but we were really, really struggling with being the only sort of support framework that we had. So we kind of formed this little clique, and we would meet every 6 to 8 weeks, and I would honestly get my car and drive to Brisbane and then drive home again just to be in the company. You know, it was really following that I received the inspiration for Soul Sister Circle. So I was sitting at home one day, I'd sort of done a meditation earlier in the day, and then I was just reflecting on life, as you do, getting all deep. And I was like, I need to go and get an A3 journal, my A3 journal and a pen. And I came back, and then for the next 30 minutes, I just wrote down everything that came to me. And really what I received was this incredible vision for a network of like-minded women who are evolving, who are wanting to rise up and wanting to do their work in the world, needing that support of sisters, of like-minded people around them. It was amazing. Like, honestly, my whole body just was alive. Like, every cell was so excited. I couldn't believe it was genius. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is so incredible. And then it was like I took another step back and I looked at it and I saw the enormity of what this idea entailed. And then that mean girl, she just came straight in and was like, well, you've never even, you know, you've never done events. You've never done this. You don't know shit about that. Like, you just can't do this. Like, it's a great idea, but
yeah,
you can do that. And so I just shut up the A3 journal and put it in the back of my cupboard and just pretended like that had never happened. Obviously, over the next, well, it was 7 months really. So over the course of the next 7 months, I just continued to coach. I continued driving to Brisbane to see my girls, and this like ghost in my cupboard just kept on haunting me. I just kept burying it and burying it. And at one point I even considered like emailing it to somebody else that I knew that sort of had experience in that field to say, hey, you should do this because this is like a brilliant idea. I don't know why I didn't do that, but yeah, perhaps on some level I knew it was for me, but I just wasn't prepared to accept it. Anyway, I was coaching and not loving it. And in fact, I was attracting all of these clients who were no longer happy with where their life currently sat. You know, they didn't fit it anymore and they wanted to do something with more meaning and more purpose. And we would sort of unpack that in our sessions. then like work out like their roadmap, you know, work out where their passions are, what their soul desires were, and then design a roadmap for them for how to get from where they are to where they need to be. Great stuff, like super, super exciting. And they just wouldn't take the first step. And I was honestly becoming so frustrated. Like, I'm just going to come over there and slap you. You need to take action. Like, you just, it's right there. Like, it's just take the first, you don't, you know, all of those cliche quotes too. You don't need to see the whole staircase, take the first step. And, you know, yeah. Night, the headlights only show you like a couple of meters in front of the car. Da, 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 like, all of this, nothing, it just wouldn't work. They wouldn't take action. And I was thinking, I'm a bad coach. Like, I can't get them to do what they need to do. And now I'm a bad coach because I'm sitting here like judging them and getting pissed off that they won't do it. And then in one day in a session, it just hit me like a freight train. And I was like, my roadmap is sitting in the back of my cupboard and I won't take the first step. And so at that point, I was like, I can't do this coaching thing anymore. Like, I can't morally take people's money and then try to motivate them or inspire them or encourage them to take a step that I'm not willing to take myself.
Yeah.
It just felt completely out of alignment for me. So I shut up shop. I closed down my coaching practice and just chalked it up to another thing that I failed at. And, you know, just more evidence for me at the time it was that everything I touch just never works out and I should just get a job and quit dreaming. And so I probably stayed in that funk again. I went into another funk and this time it was brutal, like really, because I had invested a lot of time. I didn't obviously spend a lot of time in my early days when my baby was born studying and, you know, so I'd made financial sacrifices as well as personal sacrifices, as well as my husband having to deal with, you know, this stressed out student / hormonal sleep deprived bitch. You know, I really hated myself for yet again walking away. But this idea, this community, Soul Sister Circle, kept coming back to me and it just wouldn't go. And in fact, it was just becoming more and more. Like, it started visiting me in my sleep. I couldn't shut it down. And so I kind of reached that point where the pain of just staying doing what I was doing actually became greater than the pain and the fear of taking that first step.
Yeah.
I was just like, all right, I fucking surrender. Like, I'm done. I cannot fight this anymore. I don't even care anymore. Like, if it doesn't work, like, I'm totally used to doing things and them not working. So what's one more? And it, like, don't get me wrong, I still had a ton of fear, but I was like, I just got to do it. I've got to do something. I can't keep this up.
I find it really funny because, or I don't know if it's ironic or whatever the right word is, that, you know, at the beginning, I guess, of your journey into this spiritual kind of realm was Buddhism, which is really all about not having attachment. And now you fast forward, and you're starting a business that you actually don't have any real attachment to outcome.
Yeah, you know? I know. Crazy. And it's even hilarious because pre now, I was a total control freak.
Yeah.
So that whole idea of non-attachment, like, just totally didn't apply to me. I was like, well, yeah, no, that's great. We won't attach to the outcome. We'll just do everything exactly like this, you know, exactly to the plan, and then we'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, but I'm not attached to the outcome.
Yeah.
I'm just controlling the entire process.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It's hilarious in a kind of sick sort of way. But I decided, okay, fine, I'm just going to do it and whatever. I kind of already had resigned myself to the fact that it wasn't going to be amazing. So there was no expectation to, you know, knock the ball out of the park.
Yeah.
And at the time I had a whole bunch of fear around spending money because I had invested like thousands and upon thousands upon thousands of dollars training to be a life coach, and then obviously didn't become one. So I really had a lot of hang-ups around investing in myself. And so I had to get a logo and a few bits organized for my business. And I wasn't in a, you know, a position at that point to do it myself. So I had to get a designer on board. And I remember sending off the email and paying the deposit and just being so anxious, just like really just praying that this wasn't going to be yet another example of how I spent money and then just, you know, vaporized it.
Yeah.
So I like said a prayer that, and I was like, universe, please just send me a sign that I've done the right thing. I went to bed and then I woke up in the morning and my coaching business, so I had a website and a database and everything for that business. And when I woke up that morning, it had vaporized. Like, it just didn't exist anymore. My website was gone. My emails were gone. My database was gone. Like, the company that was hosting all of my stuff went broke overnight. Wow. And took with it everything. And I had no backups. I had nothing. Like, shit. Yeah. Big sign, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I joke all the time about this. I'm like, it's a very good lesson when asking for signs from the universe to be quite specific, yeah. You know, like send me a big sign or send me a little sign or leave me a feather, you know, like
yeah, perhaps yeah. Don't leave me a feather.
Yeah. For me, as kind of bittersweet as that was, it was the encouragement and the kind of like the universal support that I needed to be like, okay, they've got me. The universe has my back right now. I just need to have faith. In a time when I couldn't and didn't have faith in myself, I relied completely on my faith in the universe and my belief that the work that I was doing with Soul Sister Circle was completely divinely inspired and led anyway, that it wasn't coming from me, it was coming through me, and that if I just followed the guidance and just did what I was being asked, you know, the road cones would line up and everything would work out. That for me was the biggest, most monumental shift probably to date in my life, because I really shifted gears at that point. My corporate career had really been around pushing and striving and meeting deadlines and screwing budgets and, you know, like really manipulating and nitpicking everything. And I felt moving into the space that I'm in now with Soul Sister Circle was like, whoa, lean back, allow, receive, just a complete 360 in how I operate and as a result how I show up in the world. It's been for sure an enormous learning curve. There's been so many lessons along the way, but for me, I found that was the most profound, was tapping into my own inner wisdom and my own intuition and learning to trust that. Mm. And then, you know, not buying into the BS stories around not knowing enough, not having a piece of paper, you know, like one of the first assignments that I had with Soul Sister Circle was to put on an event on the winter solstice, which I did last year. I'd never done an event before then. Like, I'd planned my wedding, that was it. So I, of course, had a whole host of stuff, chatter going on in the back of my mind, like, you're crazy, you can't do this, you don't even know where to start. And it was true. I didn't have any of those answers, but I pulled on my faith and I was like, it's okay. The next step is going to reveal itself. And I was completely amazed at how effortlessly everything did align. You know, I would have people drop into my inbox I saw you on Facebook and I just felt called to connect with you. And I'm like, of course you did, because you are a musician and I need one. Or, yeah, you know, like, it was just, yeah, a very synchronistic in that sense. And again, just constant confirmation for me to let go of attachment to the outcome, let go of control, and just trust and just do the best that you can do. And that event was a sellout and a huge success. And that's very much been the case for Soul Sister Circle since. And it's now, you know, I'm surrounded by emotional, crazy, wild women, and I love it. I absolutely love it. I've got such a huge tribe of soul sisters now. It makes all the difference having that support framework, because I still face fears. I still, like, the old Beck is not, you know, she's totally still there, and it's all the same negative self-talk and the same doubts and the same fears. But I'm able to manage it so much better now, because I've got this, like, incredible army of amazing, wise, intuitive women who've totally got my back. Yeah. Plus, add to that the universe, and I'm, like, on fire.
Totally. Man, I just, like, listening to your story, it's just, it's like we've lived the same timeline, but you're, like, you know, what you've gone through has been similar to what I've gone through, but just different, you know. So just, there were so many things, like, you know, when I met my husband, and he's really grounded and, you know, keeps me grounded. He's much calmer, much more easygoing, you know, all that kind of jazz, very supportive. You know, I had a deep depression just after 30. I felt very isolated, lonely, and it led to me kind of having a bit of a breakdown and all that negative self-talk going on. You know, I was a play hard, work hard. Oh, God, big play hard. Yeah. You know, and I pretty much everything that you said, the timeline is very similar to what I experienced myself, even to this point now, you know, like when – you know, I had the Office Collective and I had some healing to do after that, because, yeah, like, that was a big public failure of my behalf, on my behalf, or I felt like it was me, you know. Mm-hmm. And then now all of a sudden I just have this, yeah, non-attachment to the outcome. I just show up and I just do what I got to do.
Yeah. You know?
And there's so much freedom in that.
So much freedom. Yeah. It's really and cool. Yeah, and when you aren't attached to your outcome, you're so much more open to receiving. And then, you know, you can kind of allow your soul to guide you, you know, like be – it's funny, because when I look back and I said to you at 30, I sort of sat down and I had this moment of despair where I thought, how did I get here? Like, how did my life – get to this point, and how did I allow that to happen? I'm living in a country that I don't like. I'm working a job that I hate. My health is disgusting. You know, I think at that point I hadn't even had a period for like 12 months or something. Like, I was just a total, I couldn't move my arms.
My shoulders were the same. They used to call, because then I started going to yoga at that same kind of time, and they used to call me concrete shoulders, because I was literally like
stiff all the time. Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. And it's crazy, right? Because we're just unconsciously spinning our wheels and going through the motions, and we're just so asleep, like we're so completely numbed out that we don't have any awareness of where this car is going.
For me, there was like big issues of unworthiness, you know. I was unworthiness of, you know, I was unworthy of everything, of love, self-love, love from other people, you know, friendship, everything. It just, like, you know, yeah, totally numb to everything and asleep, really, life was just happening to me. And I think there's a difference, because letting go, it's not like you just let go and you're like, oh, well, I'll just be fat and lazy and not do anything. And, you know, that's not letting go. That's like giving up on life, you know.
Yeah.
I think, like, the difference is now I kind of consciously create, you know. I know that I can I can change my reality if I need to. I know that, like, but I also know that it's not about control. Like, it's this weird place where I know that I can change things with the power of my intention and my action, but I'm also not really controlling that, you know?
Yeah. I totally know what you mean. Like, intention and an action, we can choose consciously in the moment with our level of awareness that we have, with the tools and the resources available to us right now, and that's amazing. If you're not too tight, too linked in to how it has to happen and what has to happen at the end.
Yeah.
Because that's where the stumbling block, right? It's like, I'm 30, I need to be married and have kids and, you know, if I had have achieved all of those things, would I have had any more level of happiness? Unlikely, you know, because that wasn't for me. That wasn't the way this was meant to unravel. And I think when you can be respectful of the fact that, yes, you are here and you've got work to do and, you know, you want to obviously make the most of every opportunity and the time that you have here, you have to be respectful to the fact that there is a process involved. There's lessons to be learned. There's soul contracts. You know, you can't expect control life to that degree, because really certainty is an illusion. There's no such thing, you know, like all we ever really have is infinite moments of now, you know, 5 minutes from now. It's not certain, and we don't know what could happen. All we really ever know is what's happening right now and how we choose to respond to that. And so I think when we can drive our bus, like we can drive our life with that, with the power of intention and the power of purpose and being kind of guided by our internal compass, you know, we're going to meander along the right sorts of roads. And we're not going to find ourselves so frequently down the dark streets that sort of lead to nowhere.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's on the couch.
Biggest fear?
Not being good enough. Yeah. Not being up for the job. Easy. Easy, easy answer. It's plagued me for as long as I can remember, you know, just this inner desire to measure up, and then this fear that I'm not going to. And, you know, then after that comes a whole host of other things, like I'm going to pretend like I'm good enough and then hope nobody finds out or figures me out, you know. And I think that's probably fairly a common fear that a lot of people share, because it plays right into our basic human need, you know, to belong and to feel significant, to feel like we matter and that us being here is of worth. Yeah, so I would say that even to a degree, coming onto this podcast with you, you know, that like Mean Girls going, well, what do you know? Yeah. What are you going to say that anyone wants to hear? You know, like it's just a constant stream for me that's always present. But I think the way that I've found to move or to dance with that, because I don't move through it, I don't shut it up. It's like just there, but we dance, and it's just the more we dance, the more I realize, okay, well, this is just like this ongoing conversation that we're going to have that we're never probably going to resolve, and you're going to tell me one thing and then I'm going to do the opposite, and then, you know, if it goes well, you'll be quiet for a bit, and if it goes badly, you're going to get really loud and be like, I told you so, and that's just how we're going to roll, and it doesn't have to mean anything. It's just like a dialogue. And, yeah, I think it's something that once crippled me a lot. And as I said, I had a lot of reference points for failure. And so it was great. Like, she had this full deck of cards that she could just pull out and be like, but do you remember that time? Mm-hmm. And what about this time? And, you know, don't touch it. It'll turn to shit. And, yeah, but it's now, as I said, mastering that dance and learning to coexist.
Yeah, cool. And what do you struggle with?
I struggle with, I still struggle with decision making sometimes. Like, and what I find is I will, when I'm kind of disconnected, like when I'm disconnected from source and I'm not doing my spiritual practices or, you know, being conscious and more, if I flip back into my old like masculine tendencies of just get the job done for its least amount of money and, you know, I've kind of disconnected and I've stepped into my head, and that's when I start to really struggle with making decisions, because then that, you know, that fear of getting it wrong comes back in. The way that I combat or dance with that is really about coming back into my heart and really connecting back to my intuition and sitting with things and feeling into things a lot more, and just then going, okay, I'm going to just trust what feels right. And even if logically it doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah, that would be my biggest struggle, because I really do. I'm a Gemini too, so it doesn't help that there's two of me in here, like flipping here, there, and everywhere. So that is, yeah, probably my number one struggle.
What do you think have been your biggest lessons?
My biggest lessons have been that I am worthy of, first and foremost, my own love and respect, but also the love and respect of others. I'm worthy of happiness, and I'm worthy of living a life that I love, because obviously there was a lot of times in my life where I felt that on some level I deserved the pain that I was experiencing. Another lesson would be that I am capable, that actually I, and everybody, this is like blanket across the board rule, everybody is so much more resourceful than they believe or than they're aware of. And so, you know, all of that stuff around, I've never run an event, I've never successfully networked, I don't hang out with chicks, like all of this stuff that was kind of running, looping through my mind when I was starting my business is like kind of been made redundant by the fact that I just simply took action and figured it out as I went along. And turns out I do all right, you know, like it's, we've got everything that we need.
Yeah.
Really. And so that was a huge lesson for me. And finally, to trust my intuition, to really just cultivate faith is so important. Faith in your own intuition, faith in the divine order of things, faith in the process. Just, yeah, trusting and allowing and being open.
Totally. Failure. Let's go there. What does it mean? What does it look like?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, failure. You know, even when I've been talking to you throughout this podcast, it grates me every time I say the word, because actually I don't identify with failure at all anymore. So while I say in my story there's been all of these moments of failure, those moments felt like absolute, complete, dropped the ball, like really screwed it up failure. But the beauty of hindsight is I see that those were all just like these incredible twists and turns that were trying to arrive me to where I am right now.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I possibly could have taken a much shorter road to get to where I am right now, but no, I had to take the long way. For me, failure is more something, it's a feeling. It's not a thing. It's like just that feeling of disappointment when you didn't perhaps get the outcome that you would have hoped for. And again, it sort of comes back to, for me, cultivating that faith and believing that everything does happen for a reason. What's for you will not go by you. If things don't go your way, it's a blessing. You just may have to wait to see why. And then it's just feedback, you know, it's just like feedback to yourself to say, probably don't go about it that way again. You know, like that didn't go to plan, learn the lessons and move on quickly.
Yeah.
And you know, I think sometimes it's important to sit with the emotion as well. Like why am I feeling disappointed? What is this really about? What is this bringing up? Because I notice a lot it brings up that fear of like not being liked.
Yeah.
Or that feeling of I've just been rejected.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, I go through a little bit of process with myself. There's a couple of questions that I'm always asking myself, and that is that true?
Yeah, that's what I do too.
Yeah, is that true? Did you really, you know, do they really not like you? Were they just busy, or, you know, and why? Like, why were you even doing that? Like, because quite often what I experience is if I take action that's not aligned with my work and why I'm here and my purpose, that's when things go pear-shaped.
Mm. And it's funny because it seems to be, just talking to you, what I kind of have realized is that it's rarely, it is about me, but it's not about me. So it's about the way that other people see me. So the failures that I've had have been based on, you know, failing myself to a certain extent, but not living up to other people's expectations of what I should have delivered, you know.
Yeah, yeah, the fear of being judged.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's probably some kind of weird link in there somewhere.
Totally. Well, I would say that would link into, you know, worth. Mm, and as you absolutely. Said, you know, it's like, if you can't love yourself, then you're looking, I'm speaking from total experience. You seek it externally. Yeah. You want that validation to come to you. It's like you need convincing that you're lovable and you're likable.
Exactly.
So you need other people to love you before you can love yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. And I feel like that's been my big shift has been, you know, and speaking to a whole bunch of people about this, the fear, the struggle, you know, failure. All comes down to worthiness.
Mm.
You know, it all comes back to how you feel about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on that topic, recurring voice. I mean, we've talked about it a lot. What does yours say?
Beck now? Bitch face. What does she say now? The same stuff. I mean, she's not innovative. She's not creative in her methods. She just, what does she say? I don't even listen closely anymore. Actually, now she throws a lot of things at me like, you're too disorganized. And I hear it in my language too when I'm talking to people and I'll be like, oh my God, I'm chaos. Like my life is just total chaos. Or, you know, like I don't do detail. I can't do detail. I'm a big picture person, which is true, but that shouldn't be an excuse or a handbrake. But, you know, like this is the stuff now that she throws at me quite a lot to derail me because I guess, you know, the whole you're not good enough card just doesn't work anymore. Yeah. But, I mean, she still throws that out there along with a whole bunch of other things like you're stupid and you can't handle success is another one. Yeah. Total bitch.
Yeah, total bitch. okay, so now I'm going to ask a couple of more, you know, lighter questions.
Sure.
This is a fairly new question that I've just started asking because I'm really interested in it myself. Freedom. What does freedom mean to you and what does it look like?
Freedom to me is about permission. It's about giving yourself permission to wake up and live your life the way that feels joyous and liberating to you. So, and this is an idea that I've actually been sort of sitting on a lot recently as well, is this notion of permission, because I'm now a mum of two. It's like off the charts, the amount of mother's guilt that comes into play. Like it was bad enough with one and now I have Eli, my son, and if I'm present with him, then I feel guilty that I'm not present with Indy. And then if I'm present with Indy, I'm like, oh, poor Eli's getting shafted. Like Indy had all the attention for so long and he has to share it. And, you know, like it just goes on and on and on and on. And anyway, it got me thinking about this feeling of like freeing myself from this feeling of guilt and giving myself permission to do the best that I can and to just follow what feels good rather than have an agenda to achieve X, Y, and Z, or if we're looking at it from a business perspective rather than looking at it from how to make the most money or how to get the most exposure, just feel good. Mm. Just wake up and feel good, because it's really, for me, it simplified things in a beautiful way that just meant I can live my life and enjoy it. And it doesn't need to be this process of becoming, reaching, or achieving. It just becomes a moment-to-moment thing.
Yeah, and that's freedom.
Totally. And that's freedom, yeah.
Love it. Okay, so the last question.
Mm.
Self-care. Do you do anything, or what does it mean to you?
I get to shower for at least 30 seconds every day.
Winning.
Winning. You know, there's even sometimes I get to go to the bathroom by myself. Yeah.
That's freedom.
Yeah. Self-care for me these days looks a little bit like moments of peace.
Yeah.
Reading a book, going to yoga, maybe like having a shower, like legitimately having a shower that's longer than 30 seconds, washing my hair.
It's the little things.
It's the little things. But it's the way that I approach those little things that makes them self-love.
Yeah.
So, because obviously that's just stuff that everybody does, but my intention behind it is honoring myself, honoring my body, honoring this vehicle, cherishing it, looking after it, because there's not a whole lot of time in my life between the two kids and the business and family and friends and hubby, and there's not a lot of space there for more indulgent practices, which sucks, but that's my reality right now and I've chosen it. So yeah, it's just a daily recognition and feeling towards myself that, you know, you're an amazing mom, you're an amazing daughter, you're an amazing wife, you're an amazing businesswoman. It's just acknowledging that, all of those qualities in myself that are incredible, and then nourishing my body in any way that I can. So if it's just brushing my teeth, I'm like, yeah, I'm taking care of this vehicle. And it's really that simple. Has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
So if you want to find me, our paths will cross. No. If you want to find me, I am online at soulsistercircle.com.au and also on Facebook and Instagram. I have regular events on the Gold Coast in Australia. And in the new year, I'm very, very excited to be bringing some events interstate. So look out, Sydney, because I'm coming. Melbourne peeps, I would love to get down there too, but I can't make any promises just yet. Yeah. So
see how it unfolds.
That's right. It's, you know, I'm feeling the pull. It's just a resource thing, right? Yeah. I'm like, I need my kids to sleep a little bit more before I commit too much in 2016. But yeah, it's on the cards.
Divine timing.
Exciting. Yes, of course.
The takeaway. Exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
My nugget of wisdom, which has been my realization in the last 18 months since starting my business, is really to get curious about yourself. Get curious about what lights you up, what brings you joy, what you stand for, you know, what's important to you, because if you don't know what your soul desires, you can't go out and get it. Like, it's really that simple. And I think you know, myself included, a lot of us can look externally for inspiration. We can look at other people who may be in businesses that are similar to, you know, what we feel we would like to do. And then rather than tap into our internal guidance, we kind of follow a model. So we look at what they've done and how they've created their success, which is great to a degree. I'm not saying not to do that, but make sure that the goals and the dreams that you're chasing are really yours. Because as I found with my life coaching, I was like hell-bent chasing that dream down so hard. And it was like just play, that path was just plagued with resistance. Like, I don't know how many signs the universe needed to give me that I was on the wrong path. Like, it shouldn't be this fucking hard.
Yeah,
because I'd kind of bought into a dream that wasn't really for me. It wasn't really my dream. So that, I think, is my takeaway, is just get really curious about yourself and who you are and what makes you tick, and then give yourself permission to express that in what you do in your life, because that is your recipe, like your unique recipe for success and happiness.
Totally. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out.